Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by Gold Boys. Coming up on the show, Matt Grissom of NCAA Baseball Insiders will join us. We'll talk some College World Series. I'll talk some finals here to start. And look, just to take you behind the curtain here of the process of getting ready for the show, I think, you know what? If Boston wins game three, it's 3-0. I'm probably just going to do College World Series for my guest here. And if Boston had lost game three and it was 2-1, I probably would have done NBA, but at 3-0, I mean, there's just not a lot to talk about. It's been a lot like the rest of these playoffs, where just disappointing. Came in and thinking, hey, it's, you know, pretty wide open. Boston's the best team, but they're vulnerable. There's some good teams in the East, possibly with Giannis if he's healthy, which he wasn't. Embiid if he's healthy, which he really wasn't. Knicks are a fun team. They got hurt. It's just a lot of injuries, a lot of bad series, a lot of series where, yeah, the games were competitive, but the series weren't. And then some series were competitive and the games weren't, like Minnesota, Denver. And I go back to Minnesota, Denver. That Sunday night, we're doing that game, just are doing that podcast after, where Minnesota is down by 20. Denver's up 20 at home in a game seven in the second half. And them blowing that, them just completely going in a shell, just can't make a shot. That's what really ruined these playoffs going forward, because Denver, Boston would have some juice. Now you could say, hey, maybe Murray wasn't healthy and they weren't going to, you know, beat Dallas or beat Boston. Murray just, it was a matter of time with his, you know, his ankle was hurt, and then he just wasn't 100%. He was banged up too. Maybe that is what ruined it, but Denver-Boston would have been fun. Denver-Boston would have been really competitive, and ever since Denver lost, the series, these games just haven't had a lot of juice. Dallas-Minnesota was fine. Some of the games were good, but just didn't feel like a conference finals with those two teams. Didn't feel like those were the two best teams in the West, and Boston and Indy, the games were good, but you never felt like Indy had any real chance of winning more than a game, maybe two in that series. So here we are, Dallas minus one for a game four. Totals 211.5 after a bunch of overs in the conference finals in both the East and the West. All three games in these finals have gone under. No feel on the total. I would expect Boston to win. I'm surprised Boston's getting one. I don't love getting involved with these series when they're 3-0 anyway, because I feel like whoever gets a lead, the other team says, whatever, this series is over. Or, you know, let's say Boston gets down 10. We can close it in game five. No big deal. We got our game. We're satisfied. We got our split. We'll just close it out at home in a couple of days. And if Dallas gets 10, they say, you know what, we're not winning this series. And they do a little packing it in, you know, 1-2-3 Cancun, that kind of thing, where they're starting to have one eye on their vacation, their summer, and they know it's over. So I don't love getting involved 3-0. I thought Boston would get at least one of these games. In Dallas, they obviously have. I would pick Boston in game four. I think we get a sweep. No, who knows? Dallas wins this game, and, you know, Luka goes for 50 in game five, and then who knows? Maybe we can get have a series here where, obviously, a team down 3-0 has never come back to win. It's rare that you even get a game seven. Boston was one of those rare situations last year, but that was different, where they were much better than Miami, and they got it to a game seven, and they were a seven-point favorite in game seven, and they were home. It's different now because five would be in Boston, seven would be in Boston. You got to win both your home games. And Boston's just much better than Dallas. And I'll say this too. Luka's a great offensive player, brilliant offensive player. Shooting, passing, he hasn't been great in the series, especially in the fourth quarters. The whining is just so over the top. And I know Brian Windhorst destroyed him, rightfully so. The whining after every call, after every non-call, every single call, he's yelling at the bench. He's telling them to review. He plays absolutely no defense. You got to be better than him. If he's ever going to win a championship, now, like you can say, he got him to a finals. There's a difference between getting a finals and basically getting swept or losing in five and actually holding up the trophy, winning a championship. He's going to have to at least be competitive defensively. Jokic took a step defensively where for years he was just completely not unplayable, but just a complete liability. He got to the point where he's okay, maybe a little better than okay. Luka's got to get to a point where he's at least okay, because Boston's one of these teams where every guy on the court you have to guard. They have five pretty good offensive players, and there's no weak spot. There's nowhere to hide Luka. And that's the problem here. You need somewhere to hide him, and when you don't have anywhere to hide him, he just doesn't give you enough of an effort. He is just so bad defensively. Just really, between the whining and the defense, I am down on Luka. Now, look, he's one of the two or three best players in the league. I understand that, but it's hard to actually win. The best players in the league, the teams that the all-time great players, the MVPs, the guys that are the best player in title teams, the Jordans, Durants, Kobe, LeBron, and again, that's high territory. We're not putting them in that category, but best player on a title team usually can play both ways. Very rarely do you get a DH where a guy can be such a great offensive player that he doesn't play any defense whatsoever. You have to at least get passable. Curry got to a point where he's passable. Jokic was passable. Luka is not at that point yet, and the whining is just so constant, such a distraction where, look, if I was a ref, I wouldn't give him any calls either. I'm just tired of hearing them all game. It's so ridiculous. So I like Boston in game four. I wouldn't go crazy just because, again, when it's 3-0, but who knows? Who knows if Boston comes here satisfied? What's interesting is the MVP. Tatum now is at least in the mix here, where Brown's the favorite. I think Brown's rightfully a favorite. Looking at DraftKings, Brown minus 280, Tatum plus 250. Now, if Dallas could win and this goes back to five, then you're stretching it out where you're bringing more guys into it. Where if Tatum has a good game four and then a really good closeout game five, assuming Dallas wins, I'm just painting the scenario where Dallas does win game four. Maybe Tatum at plus 250 is worth a shot. I think Brown's rightfully favored at minus 280. And just the fact that, you know, Tatum was so bad in two games and Boston's one game away from closing out, where if Boston does win in four, it's going to be hard for Brown not to win it. Holiday didn't do enough in game three to stay in the mix. But if I was going to bet anything, I'd bet Tatum just with the thought, hey, if Dallas wins, then that levels the playing field where Tatum has a good four, game five, maybe he could win it. But it is interesting. I do think Brown is the rightful favorite here as far as to win the title. Boston minus 3,500. You're only getting 17-1 on Dallas. I would need much, much more than that. And that's not playable. You're not even a scenario where, hey, you win three in a row and then you could hedge in game seven. You could be a big underdog in game seven. So that's not nearly enough. The 17-1, that is a short pay. I would just play him. If you think for whatever reason, Dallas can get back into it, hey, Porzingis is hurt, and Porzingis we're not going to see again the rest of the series. That's a pretty serious injury. If you think Porzingis is hurt, hey, what if somebody else got hurt? I want to take Dallas. We'll just play him game by game. You don't need to take 17-1. 17-1 is not worth it. So disappointing. Just all the way around in terms of these playoffs. Not a lot of game sevens, not a lot of good games, a lot of blowout series, a lot of blowout games. Just been it's been a letdown. So it happens sometimes. Maybe we'll get some juice out of the hockey. I think the College World Series, which is why I'm bringing Matt Grissom on, I think that's going to get a lot of attention. If you like baseball, you say, hey, basketball's pretty much over. Hockey, the series is 2-0 as we're recording this. Game three is tonight. Hockey, if that's ever 3-0, but you get both short series, the NHL and the NBA, you can turn your attention to college baseball, which is a lot of fun. The games are on during the day. You know, the games are exciting. Those games are a lot of fun to watch. And before we get to Matt, I just quickly pivot to the College World Series. Florida's a team that's interesting. 12-1 at DraftKings. They have a lot of pitching. They were in the title game last year. They're almost, if people are familiar with the Ole Miss story from 2 years ago, where they were the last team in the tournament, had a terribly disappointing regular season, but they got in, they got hot, and they won the whole thing. Florida has that kind of talent where they could do it. They play A&M in the first game where they're plus 150, where, hey, if you want to use a free bet, if you want to just have some action, Florida at 12-1, I don't think is a terrible bet. So we'll talk to Matt coming up, see if he agrees. We'll get his thoughts on these other games. That is next. This is the Shoulda Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Let's talk a little college baseball. Had him on a couple weeks ago, did a great job, and he is back. He is Matt Grissom. You can catch him at NCAABaseballInsiders.com. And he joins us now. Matt, we're down to eight teams. Exciting weekend. What's going on, man?
Eight teams. It's crazy. The season feels like it just started because a lot of people are now adding it to their betting market. But for us, we started back in February, so it's kind of bittersweet seeing it all just come to fruition. All of our futures tickets that we bet way back in February, now you're down to eight teams. The season end is right around the corner, so it's bittersweet, but we've got a jam-packed College World Series. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, eight teams, but only two conferences, ACC, SEC, four from each, I think it is, and then that's it. So two conferences. Let's get into, before we get into the matchups, just in general, last year, a lot of unders. It's a big park. The wind can be a factor. Now, we don't have totals up right now at the time of recording this. Books are hesitant to put that up for whatever reason. But would you expect the under trend to continue? We'd be looking to play unders in this tournament.
Yeah, I feel like it's a lot of 11.5s, 12.5s out there in Omaha. One thing to monitor, and we've got it in our guide if you go over to collegebaseballinsiders.com, we've got the weather forecast for all of the 10 games that are going to be played from the 14th to the 24th. There's a lot of wind coming in, 15th, 16th. It's like 16 and 13-mile-per-hour winds, 18-mile-per-hour winds on the 17th. So this weekend may tick up a little bit in those totals, given that the wind's going to be blowing out in right field. But another thing too, you've got a few aces that are really good, but you don't have the pitching that you had last year. Like last year, it was Chase Burns. You had Paul Skenes. This year, you've got like Jamie Arnold for Florida State, who could keep it lower scoring. Trey Pouzer for Kentucky is not a name that's going to jump off the stat sheet. But outside of that, I feel like all of these teams are more offensive driven. So that's going to be something to monitor here. as we get the totals come out to the market. But Ryan Prager for A&M, he struggled during the regular season when he faced this Florida lineup, which is loaded. So looking at the aces that are typically going to keep you in those lower scoring games may not be the case this year just because of the firepower these teams have on offense.
And yeah, I forget the numbers off the top of my head, and some of it depends on when you bet it and where you bet it, but the unders were just a cash cow last year. Do you remember top of your head what the unders did last year in the College World Series or no?
I mean, they were hitting
70-80%.
70%. Yeah, it was insane.
We also had
a lot of good pitching.
Yes.
Like Rhett Lauder, the whole Wake Forest staff was really good. Tennessee's pitching staff was really good. TCU had turned it on. So I'm just not seeing that in these teams this year. No pitcher that I can think of other than Jamie Arnold and Ryan Prager in this field have an ERA under 3.5.
Let's get into these matchups here. All ACC. This is the first game, 2 o'clock Friday afternoon, 2 o'clock Eastern time. UNC, a small favorite over Virginia. We don't have a total. Virginia, they got a bunch of guys that hit over 300. They've got kind of a balanced lineup. What are you looking for in this matchup?
My gut tells me that it's going to be Virginia. I like North Carolina a lot, but getting plus money with Virginia. This is a team that's been here. This is Brian O'Connor's seventh time to the College World Series, all with Virginia. They won it back in 2015. Evan Blanco has been playing out of his mind in his last five appearances. He's got a sub-3 ERA. His season-long stats don't look great, but they're 3.69 ERA. Jacob Ferentz, Harrison Didowick, Henry Ford, not that Henry Ford, but he is built Ford tough, man. This Virginia team, they can score runs in a hurry, and they've got the pitching staff to keep it lower scoring. They did beat North Carolina in a series in the middle of the regular season, but North Carolina's kind of playing hot right now. Vance Honeycutt, Casey Cook, this offense can click. And with Shea Sprague on the mound, I think it'll be a lower scoring game, but I wouldn't be surprised if one of these teams can get their starting pitcher out by the fifth inning, then that's when you'll see the offense start to turn on. So initial gut, I think Virginia, even though I'm not going to be surprised if North Carolina wins, but I would be on Virginia plus the money or pass because this is a coin flip. So I feel like if you're getting plus money, there's good value on that.
And Honeycutt for North Carolina, man, he hits some bombs. I watch him against West Virginia. When he hits them, they go, and he likes to let you know he hit him. He just stands there and stares at him, which I know it's different college baseball than major leagues, but, man, that's he certainly enjoys his homers. And I think the kid for West Virginia is still on the mound in Chapel Hill. I think 144 pitches, they let him go. It's crazy just the differences between the major leagues and the college game.
It is.
All right, Florida State, Tennessee minus 166. You get plus 130 on Florida State. What are you looking for here?
Okay, so all season long, DraftKings was kind of the first one to market on a lot of these odds. They were last, as far as my knowledge goes. I first saw lines around Bet Rivers, and then FanDuel had put them out. Florida State opened plus 210. I thought this was way too high. I don't know who they were expecting the starting pitcher to be. But like I said earlier, Jamie Arnold, one of the only true aces in this field, 2.77 ERA, a 1.71 Sierra. He's the real deal. If he can go seven innings against this star-studded Tennessee lineup, I like Florida State to keep it close. I'll be interested to see what the total is because this is another one that I feel like is going to go under. It's really the best pitching matchup, in my opinion. You can throw out Chris Stamos. He's kind of their opener for Tennessee. You're going to get him for an inning, maybe an inning and a third. And then you're going to get AJ Causey. Causey, 2.17 Sierra, 3.77 ERA. But you look at Tennessee, they're stacked. They're number one in basically every stat across the board, from batting average to WOBA, weighted runs created plus to Sierra. They're definitely the team to beat. But I do feel like if there's one opportunity that they lose one in Omaha, it's going to be against Jamie Arnold and James Tibbs, this Florida State team that can really put up runs in a hurry, as we saw in that UConn Super Regional.
Yeah, and Tennessee can swing the bat. Watched a bunch of them against Evansville last week, and they're a fun team to watch. How about Kentucky, NC State? I know you've been on Kentucky. It's been a hard team for you to figure out. They kind of do more with less. NC State has played well recently, a little like the NC State basketball team that, you know, got hot and went to the Final Four. And NC State a few years ago, I remember they had a really tough break where They got COVID. They were had a chance to go to the championship round. They got COVID. They basically got kicked out of the tournament for having COVID 2021. But what are you looking for here, Kentucky and NC State?
Yeah, Sam Heifel actually on that team. He's going to start tomorrow or Saturday for NC State. But yeah, unfortunate situation. They beat Vanderbilt and then they had an elimination game with them and had to forfeit because the whole team got COVID. And then Vanderbilt went on to, I guess, is that the year they won?
No, they didn't win that year. I think
lost
they
lost to Mississippi State.
Yeah, they lost to Mississippi.
But yeah, they all start running together. But yeah, I think him, Sam Heifel, maybe Dom Fritton were both on that team. But this NC State team, they looked really good against Georgia. Georgia could not hit the slider, and that was worrisome to me. But also another guy that's pretty good at throwing a slider is Hagan Smith, and he shut down this Kentucky Wildcats offense too. My initial lean in this one was to take the plus money on NC State, but the more that I'm looking at it, I like you said, I can't figure this Kentucky team out. They're pretty much dead last in the last 15 games. They're for the field of eight. They've got a 5.88 team ERA. They're 105 in weighted runs created plus, 19 home runs. That's good for dead last in that, batting average 265. I don't know what they're going to be able to do to slow down this NC State lineup that really flexed against Georgia's pitching. I would put Trey Poozer a little bit better than Leighton Finley, but Leighton Finley got the win against NC State when he was pitching for Georgia in that super regional. I think Kentucky can keep this kind of a lower scoring game. They absolutely shut down an Oregon State lineup, which in my opinion is light years better than NC State's. Should Kentucky be minus 145 right now? That's kind of my biggest question. I feel like more value is on NC State, but it's not going to surprise me if once again the stats are wrong and Kentucky wins.
What I've noticed is like in majors, the difference when you lay 1.5 and take 1.5, usually when you're taking the 1.5 and it's right around like minus 120, the favorite's huge. Some of these where the money line's not that long and then you're still getting 1.5 on the other side. Is that just because, hey, more runs and the 1.5 isn't as valuable?
Yeah, that's typically it. The higher totals. And this is another market where DraftKings, you know, they put out the Yerfy Nerfy, the first five team total unders, stuff like that. There's going to be multiple ways to attack it this weekend. So I'm really excited to see what markets are out there. And I'll tweet out my best bets, but there's going to be numerous ways that I'll attack this instead of just how we did during the regular season of just either betting a side total or a run line. The plus 1.5, I do feel like is big in Omaha just because the park plays larger. You're typically lower scoring. And then the worrisome thing is when you get to the bullpens, a 3-4 game through the seventh can turn into a 12-5 game before you know it. So that to answer your question, yeah, the 1.5 is somewhat useless in a higher scoring game, but in a couple of these, I do think they can be lower scoring. So I'll probably look to play like first five unders and run lines.
Yeah, and I like taking the 1.5, especially when you have the road team, because as long as you get to the bottom of the ninth tied, I mean, unless you get beat with a walk-off multi-run homer, the game's going to end as soon as you get a run. So that 1.5 is super valuable. Now, this one's interesting. Texas A&M, a team you love, they're down their best player here, minus 195 against the Florida team. That's really interesting. Plus 150, you mentioned them a couple weeks ago when you came on. There's some shades of Ole Miss where they were lucky to get in. They didn't play well all season, but they have a lot of talent. They have a lot of pitching. They have a lot of experience. They're plus 150 in this game, and they are 12-1 to win it all. Second longest odds. Who do you like here?
Florida Gators have, I mean, they basically should buy a Kevin O'Sullivan a vacation home in Omaha. This is his ninth trip there. This is Jim Schlossnagel's seventh. He's never won it. This team is on a completely different trajectory, though, for the Aggies, opposed to Florida. Florida, the hottest team right now in college baseball. They're finally living up to their potential. They showed it in Oklahoma State's regional, and then they showed it against Clemson. Texas A&M got the beneficiary of getting to play a weaker number three seed in Oregon at home, and they were down, I think, 8-0 before you could blink in that one. Granted, they did come back and win, but they've lost Shane Sadeo, their second game starter, and they lost Braden Montgomery, the best player on that team outside of Jace LaViolette. Now, they do still have guys that can rake, but Liam Peterson's going to be the question mark for Florida. Can the freshman step up? His numbers don't look great. 5.97 ERA, 3.76 Sierra. He's been better lately, but this Texas A&M team, you look at the last 15 games, this is kind of a shell of the original team that played through the regular season. Of their last 15, they're seventh in the field in batting average, seventh in WOBA, seventh in weighted runs created plus, fourth in ERA. This was a team that held the number two ERA team stat all season long, with Arkansas being number one, who's not in this field. So Texas A&M playing worse, Florida playing a lot better. Give me the Gators. I got them at plus 190 when these lines opened. Like I said, they were bad numbers when they opened, but you said Florida plus 150 right now.
Yep. And 12-1 to win it all.
I took him 20-1 to win it all. I guess this was before game two of the Clemson Super Regional. 12-1. It's getting down to where it should be. I'd play it down to 10-1. This team has been here. They've won a national championship under O'Sullivan. 67% win percentage for this coach. He's very good. He has a very lethal lineup where anybody could get hot at the right time. So back to Gators. If they get game one, they're basically in the driver's seat to get through that very weak bracket two.
If somebody, let me read you the futures, and if somebody had no bets, tell me where you go here.
I would play.
Yeah, go ahead.
My long shot would be Florida. I would play the Gators to come out of that right side. For the left side, I'm probably going chalk in Tennessee. Even if Florida State beats Tennessee in game one, Florida State can't afford to go through the loser's bracket and pitch an extra one, potential two games. Tennessee can. And I feel like the same could be said for Florida. Florida's got guys that can go deep. They've had to do it before. They did it in Stillwater. That's why they came out of the Stillwater Regional. So I would say Florida on one side, Tennessee on the other. You've got a favorite and a dog. Root for them to meet up in the College World Series. And from there, you can just sit back and enjoy good baseball.
So forget all your predictions, forget futures, forget everything. Right now, title game is who and who wins?
I think it's Tennessee, Florida, and Tennessee wins.
Wow.
2-1.
Interesting. This is
they'll be the first one seed to do it since the Miami Hurricanes back in 1999.
There's going to be a lot of eyes, I think. I think this sport is obviously, we talked about last time, this sport is growing on its own, but the fact that NBA is 3-0 at the time we're recording this, NHL's 2-0 at the time we're recording this, you're getting, you know, you're not that they're direct competition, but people say, hey, basketball's over, hockey's close to over. Let's watch some college baseball. So I get the sense this is going to be popular. It's getting more and more popular, but I get the sense there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on these games this coming week or so.
Yeah, and it's fun. Look, if you have not tuned in to college baseball and you want just to throw a couple bets out there, follow us along at NCAA Insiders. I've been doing this personally since 18, and my co-host Q, he started College Baseball Insiders with me 2 years ago. We've been rolling. I think I went up over 90 some odd units last year, and he was around 50. Now we've basically flip-flopped. I'm around 50 and he's over 90. He's absolutely killing it. But we research his stuff so you guys don't have to. Pitching matchups, everything's out there. So go download the guide on our website, collegebaseballinsiders.com, and just enjoy the ride, because this is a very entertaining sport to watch and to bet on.
Plus 50 units, plus 90 units. Those numbers work. Those, you pay the bills with those numbers.
Yeah, it's been really, really fun. Fun riding. And, you know, the one thing that I will say, once you get into the postseason, more eyes, more odds makers, they can get sharper on the numbers.
Yeah.
The regular season's really, you know, where you make a lot of money because you pay attention better than anybody else. Postseason, this is kind of where we get to sit back and root for our futures tickets to get home. But there's still money to be made. So just follow us along and enjoy it.
Is it hard when you win that much? Do you start to get issues in terms of like limited when you're winning on a niche sport like this?
I use three books here in Arkansas plus an offshore. And then I've got DraftKings, Circa, all within my reach. So
yeah.
The one thing I did do this year, I upped my unit size. So my units actually got cut in half of what they were last year. which, you know, I expected that to happen. I think I was plus 38 units to end to as of right now. So last year it would have been, what, about 76? So I'm not betting just a ton of money on them. My bigger liabilities are going to be on the futures markets, because as I end out a month of betting, if it was a success, I'll take a lot of that profit and roll it over into futures, because they're so slow to move odds. Like if a team through a month goes 13-2 over, you know, five series, their odds may drop maybe $100, $200. It's like I'm sitting on an NC State, or not NC State, North Carolina ticket, 30-1 to win it, Virginia 40-1 to win it. And I got those somewhere along the mid season. So just reinvest. And then by the time you get here, you hope that you've got three or four futures tickets that are live that you can cash out on.
Matt, you're the best, man. Pretty soon, Arkansas basketball, your boy Calipari there. Are people excited there? What kind of expectations do you have for Arkansas hoops?
Yeah, it's going to be a brand new team, from head coach to all the players on staff. We did get Trevin Brazil back. I'm not really sure why he came back, but he's there. It's going to be interesting. I've heard that Cal is an odd duck. He's kind of very mobbish in the way that he operates. I'm friends with one of Muss's old assistant coaches, and we text back and forth. He's like, yeah, it's night and day different from how Muss operated. So I think it's good. It's all on the DL, and everything that they do, it's all private. So that's kind of odd, rather than it being out there. I think he's going to win. He may get bounced in the first or second round of the tournament. But listen, Razorback fans, we were number one team in college baseball for a while, and we had the best pitcher in the country, and we get beat in our own regional. Football teams have been crap for years, and we've missed the NCAA tournament in basketball last year too. So we need some wins in Arkansas country right now, Will.
He'll win. He'll put a top five, top 10 team on the floor. And look, one of these years, you figure one of these years, like NCAA, there is a lot of randomness to it. Okay, you'd say he's not great X's and O's coach, but one of these years with all that talent, with all the NBA guys he gets, he's just, the bracket's going to break right. They're just going to get hot at the right time, and he's going to, you know, he's going to be back to final. Remember when he was in Kentucky, I mean, he was basically Final Four or Elite Eight most of his first 7-8 years. I mean, he was there a lot, and then he just hit this lull in 2019 or whatever. That was the last time he was in the Elite Eight, where he stopped making deep runs. But I would expect him to to put good teams on the floor.
Yeah, I agree, and I feel like the money with NIL he's got, that's going to help him too, because he's not only getting, you know, he's always been great at recruiting true freshmen to come out, but now it's more of that. You've got to have those experienced guys that have been there, been in situations, and you get them over, now you can start winning with those true freshmen. So I feel like that was his biggest problem with Kentucky, is for whatever reason, they weren't giving him the NIL money to go get these players. Now he's got it. We'll root for the best.
Matt, you're the best, man. Let everyone know where they can find you. Enjoy the weekend, and let everyone know where they can catch all your stuff.
CollegeBaseballInsiders.com. It's got a great website. Thanks to Nick Dimmitt, who's been grinding away at it, making it better and better each week. And then I'm at Grissom on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it.
I will be texting you every day or checking the website. Hey, who do you like? Who am I betting? Because that's the other fun thing about this tournament, is these games are on. You get weekday games, weekday afternoon games, Friday afternoon, Monday afternoon, where Major League Baseball, for whatever reason, doesn't schedule these day games in the afternoon. And it gives you something to watch, so they're fun.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I'll be out there till Monday. Hopefully we get some good weather. That'll be something else to monitor, because the pitching, you pull somebody out for a rain delay, you're probably not going back to them afterwards. So it's fun. Just enjoy the ride, because the season's almost over. You're getting eight very, very good teams in college baseball. No real Cinderella, but this is going to make for a very interesting set of games here.
Matt, appreciate it, man. We'll do this again soon.
Yeah, thanks, Will.
All right, that will do it. Thank you to Matt Grissom. Enjoy the games. Enjoy the weekend. And we will be back Monday. The NBA season may or may not be over by that point. So start to pivot to some baseball. And you look up and we're only 6 weeks away from the Hall of Fame game. College football, NFL around the corner. So start to do more baseball, some NFL previews as basketball looks to be on the way out. But enjoy the weekend. See you guys Monday. Rate, review, subscribe. See you then.